Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We want to thank Factor for sponsoring Play Retro. Factor delivers delicious, fresh, never frozen meals that are ready to heat and eat in 2 minutes. Head to factormeals.com/retro50 and use the code retro50 to get 50% off your first box.
People, this is not a test. We are at DEFCON 5. Alpha Sector.
Check.
Tango Sector.
Check.
Delta Sector.
Only Sega Saturn has 3 32-bit processors.
Delta Sector!
3 processors mean better gameplay.
Delta Sector, you hear me?
Sony PlayStation only has one. Sega Saturn, now only $199. When you've got Sega Saturn, nothing else matters.
Sega!
PlayStation only has one.
Suck it!
So cocky. Hey everybody, welcome to Play Retro. This is Play Retro, and I'm one of your hosts, Scott Johnson. And check me out, I'm a flying on me dragon, shooting people with my dragon powers. You might even call them dragoon powers. Do you have what it takes to fight my dramatic and on-rails dragoon powers? No? Then get out of my way.
Berserk, and I'm your other host, Brian Dunaway, and this polygonal dragoon I have between my legs is an ancient beast that I befriended after his previous rider fell off. But my dragon ain't nobody's sloppy seconds. Nope. Top-tier dragooning over here. Now, excuse me while I go rail against some mouthy sandworms that were talking about yo mama. Dragooning!
Ah, dragoons, everyone.
Dragoonie.
A little bit different than your...
Ooh, the Dragoonies. We should have watched that.
The great 80s movie, The Dragoonies? Yeah.
Yeah. The Dragoonies. That would have been good. That would have been a good show.
Yeah, featuring the half pint. small round. What's his name?
Small round, half pint.
What's his name?
No. I think this is better.
What did they call him in Temple of Doom?
I don't want to know his real name. You made it better.
Short round. Jeez Louises.
Yes, but that's no fun.
No, it's not as fun as half pint, which is a Little House on the Prairie reference.
Small round.
Yeah, small round. You know, the kind you put in your little gun. Anyway, we're here. We're going to be talking about Panzer Dragoon, the big attempt by Sega to turn the Saturn into a powerhouse. This was their big showcase game. It was 3D. It was supposed to be mind-blowing. And I have to admit, at the time, it kind of was, you know, visually they were doing some stuff there. How did it work out for Sega? How did it work out for the Saturn? Well, I think you all know, but
if you don't know, stay tuned.
Yeah, but the game's a gem. Some of the some really interesting stuff around the creation of the game, and the third game in the series is especially interesting. We'll get to all of that coming up. But first, what we did in retro this week, this is weird. I didn't expect myself to be doing this, but I like to just dig around this AmberNick unit, this little device all love now. And find little games I've just never heard of before or haven't played or whatever. And for whatever reason, I've spent a lot of time in the PlayStation 1 zone. Because
huge
there's a lot
library of games. That's one of the reasons.
That's true. But it's also it's also just a console that I had, but I didn't have like a huge breadth of games. I had a lot of the mainstream stuff, the big hits, whatever. Didn't have a lot of expendable income then. And so I wasn't buying like strange games on like, oh, that looks weird from Japan. I wonder I should try that. So now I get a chance to mess around with games that I'd never heard of or didn't play with. And I remember at the time people saying, oh, the best racing game on that console ever was the Colin McRae Rally, specifically Colin McRae Rally 2.0, which was the sequel to the first one, and that made everything else look bad. Like, it was better than all of the Gran Turismo stuff. It was better than everything. And I'm just like, really? Wow. I never played it, never tried it. So I fired that up, and I think those people are right. I love a good rally game anyway.
We're the same on the rally games.
Yeah, I like, it's my favorite kind of racing game. If it's not futuristic, then give me Rally, because Rally is a different, the boss is the road, right? You're not really fighting against other people. Oh, there is a race mode where you can race other cars, but for the most part, rallies are about you mastering the course and, you know, beating times and all of that. And everything's just a very finesse sort of, ooh, move to the left just a little bit. Okay, this is going to be a really tight turn, so I've got to do some break, but I can kind of slide through this. Be careful, I'm going to run into that guy's goat or whatever. You got to just be
run into that guy's goat.
You got to be careful, right? And I love that. The
goat track. That's my favorite.
And those guys, you know, they went on to, they're the dirt people, they Codemasters. They went on to do, Dirt 1 through 5, 5 being the most recent. And then there's the two dirt rally games, dirt rally one and two, which are very hardcore rally games. Like, they're not messing around. They don't even have music while you're driving in those games. It's just like, hey, we're playing a rally game, turn everything off, and don't hit anything or else this game's screwed. It's that kind of hardcore attempt to create that. And I love that stuff. So it turns out, I just want to make an announcement here. Do you know what holds up on the PlayStation 1 like really well? Colin McRae Rally 2.0, dude. That game's freaking great. It's good.
It's amazing, because I also played that this past week, just poking around on the Anbernic RG35XX that we all got now.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. I've forgotten how good the moment-to-moment gameplay of those games really are.
Yeah.
They have some of the best, and they continue this on as well. They have some of the best physics. It may not be realistic physics, but it's not so far off that it feels arcadey. So they got this really good balance. If you want a game that controls really well, I think you can. Their series and the Colin McRae stuff is just fan freaking fantastic.
Yeah, they're great. They really established themselves with this game, and I feel bad I missed it in its heyday, because I could have seen myself spending a lot of time on the couch playing this, but instead I just spent a lot of time in bed playing it.
My friend had this game, and he was always talking about it, and I raced it a couple of times. I'm like, yeah, this is a real competent racer. At the time, though, I was really more into, Need for Speed, Hot Pursuit, kind of the more arcadey stuff that wasn't really, you know, didn't same. Really focus on rally kind of things. But
Totally same. I felt like that was, like, maybe Ridge Racer was also another one where I was just like, hey, we're just going to the arcade kind of thing. And I feel like my tastes have evolved to where I would have been better suited playing that game now.
Right.
Where I am now with the way I like to game, or the way I like to play racing games in general. But a really good time had with it. And I will say this too, if you really want to enhance the gritty mush that is PS1 graphics, because it's all gross. Mm-hmm. It's not good. All right. You put that up on a big screen, it's like, ugh, well, this is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect for a little handheld. Just great. Yeah. No issues. Yeah. Like, the 3D really pops. It feels smoother. I can't really explain it. It's just not as jank when you play it on the
There's a reason why we all like we really love the PSP and that kind of stuff. Because some of those games got ported over from there, and it's just a really good screen format size when you're playing these kind of games.
Totally agree. I think there's a lot to be said for that. By the way, I guess there's just now, speaking of Sony, emulation for Vita games has been slow.
Yes.
It's hard, I guess. And which cracks me up, because the Vita itself was really hackable. Like, the device, people went nuts.
From the beginning.
From the very beginning. Sony wasn't great at that stuff. PSP also, but the Vita was no better. And the slowness to which anyone's figured out how to actually emulate the games on the Vita has been surprising to me. I expected that to go better, but I guess there's been some breakthroughs lately, and we'll see how that translates, but kind of excited to see.
Some of that is because of I think the communities out there have really been feeding back into the preservation of these different companies that are really interested in preservation, like Sony. Sony's pretty good about wanting to do that preservation, and they're not shy about taking and borrowing and using.
Yeah, and using. They like to use.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Because if there's nothing, if we're going to talk about this week, it may be a good bit. Game preservation, super important. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about Panzer Dragoon very shortly, is you're going to see just how important it really is.
Absolutely. Brian, what'd you do? I saw some very cool video coming out of you on TikTok.
Right in my butt. So if you're following me on TikTok, I posted this recently. It is Anthony has done it again. Anthony sent me some Lego stuff in the past. I mean, Atari 2600 sent me a NES that he assembled and then sends to me and packaged really well, managed to stay together 90% of the time. And I only had to like adjust a few things and put some things back on. This time I don't know if you've seen it, but Lego just sent out just like in the last month or so, did this new Pac-Man arcade thing. And it may be my favorite Lego thing yet. Now, what I'm holding up on screen is a couple of ghosts like you would see in Pac-Man. And got Pac-Man
on
here.
So there's cool. Do that again. Yeah, push that again.
So, yeah, there's a little button on the back here that I can push, and it rotates this marquee-style Pac-Man 3D-looking Lego thing, and it just, you know, the ghosts are look one way, they're chasing Pac-Man, you push a little button on the back, and Pac-Man rotates around, and the ghosts are blue on the backside, so it gives you kind of this real tactile Pac-Man thing, but that's just the header part that goes on this much more amazing tabletop-size arcade game. And I'm showing it on screen now. It is Pac-Man, and just like you'd think, and it looks like a little tabletop thing. And there's a little wind thing on the side, and you can wind it up, and the pack pieces they move around on screen. Now Lego's a little bit deceptive about this because it says an actual Pac-Man game that plays, and I'm like, well, yeah, it follows a track.
Yeah, you're not playing
on the screen.
Yeah, it's
you're
not really actually a game. Playing it. Yeah. What I love is the pulling the back out and seeing all this shit in the back. This is so cool. Yeah.
You would not believe. You never put any Legos together that are like the really complex stuff. I mean, I played with Legos plenty of times back in the day where I would, you know, just build my own little characters and stuff. But these things, when you come with these big old giant kits, I don't know how Anthony does it. He does them like within like a couple of days. It would take me a year to complete this thing. I think the book is like a couple of hundred pages or more. And each page, when I was trying to reassemble some of the stuff that fell off, would take me like 15 minutes for a page. And I'm like, oh, my God, I would be here forever. But it's freaking insane the amount of details that Lego has put in this Pac-Man game. Oh, I didn't show you what this little.
I only have one question. I only have one question about this while you're doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why does Andrew love you and hate me? That's the question.
I don't know. Well, me and Andrew talk from time to time. We you know, I don't know what kind of relationship you have with
He just hates my guts and doesn't want to say anything.
Yeah. First of all, you keep calling
Andrew. Oh, did I say Andrew? Sorry, Anthony.
So, that may be your first clue
that
the reason why Anthony loves me and not Scott. But
that's too ironic. So the track is not alterable though. Like the little track they follow on, they go the same way.
Right. No, they go in a very specific pattern because there's it looks like you've eaten the dots on the screen. So there's dots on the outside of the screen, and it looks like Pac-Man has cleared the inside of the board of Pac-Man. And so he will run along this little maze track as you wind. And the little ghost will kind of it looks like it's random, but there's a pattern.
You know, it'd be cool. Let me tell you, it would be cool. Crazy. What would be cool is if you could automate that, like a little motor back there.
Oh, I thought about that. Actually, I thought that would be really cool if I did this. And this is almost the right size for I haven't measured it yet, but it's very close to I probably could put a screen in here, like a little iPad screen, because that's about how the size of the screen is about the size of the iPad mini. And man, it'd be cool just to kind of have a little workable, if I could just like put it on top of it and just have like a workable Pac-Man game, that'd be cool.
Yeah. And then it can make this sound like that.
Boogik, boogik.
Boogik, burger.
But I love it, man. Activate it's so Pac-Man. Cool. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's what you need to do. When you turn it on, this guy goes,
activate Pac-Man.
That's what you need. Right? And then when you go into the family room,
let's play Pac-Man.
Yep. And everyone gets stoked.
Let's play Pac-Man.
That's amazing.
I love the thought of some Japanese guy doing some sort of radio show host, an American radio show. What is that? Maybe like more like, I don't know, commercial type work, maybe. What's that voice exactly?
I don't know what he is. He's a guy. So he's Japanese. This is all I know about him. He's Japanese. He did an ad. They did an ad that was meant for American audiences. This guy doesn't speak English natively.
Right.
But he has it as a second language. And what they did is they hired him to do, to affect the best he could an American accent.
Right.
And it comes off beautifully. It really doesn't change a thing.
Pac-Man.
Yeah, don't change a thing. Never change. Call it that for the rest of your life. It's my favorite. One of my favorite things we've ever found on the show. I love it.
Oh, it's so good.
So good. So well, good. Anyway, grats to you. And Anthony, I don't know what, I don't know where I did you wrong. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Whatever, Andrew.
Whatever, Andrew, Andrew Anthony. All right, we're gonna bore ahead here, and we're gonna talk about our main topic, which starts now.
Shall we play a game?
We sure shall. Let's talk about the Panzer Dragoon series. This is a game that came out on the Sega Saturn. It was meant to be their big showcase game at the time. Although they kind of the Saturn tried to do this a couple of times, and we'll get into that, but. Anyway, it takes place in a post-apocalyptic world in which humans have begun to recover technologies from the ancient age, a world-spanning hyper-advanced civilization destroyed thousands of years before the game
started.
They
destroyed each other.
That's right.
Yeah.
And here's the deal. The ancients used genetic engineering to create living weapons, which were unleashed in a cataclysmic war that nearly destroyed every single freaking human.
No.
Yeah. The mutated descendants of these creatures have merged into wild ecosystems. And while they pose a continual threat to human civilization and serve as enemies encountered in the games. And your job is to mount a big ass dragon or dragoon.
Right. Dragoon.
And go fight shit. That's basically the game. And it was an on-rail shooter. To me, it felt like an answer to Nintendo's like Star Fox or something.
They were definitely inspired by several properties that were already out there. Star Fox being one of them. And the on-rail shooting, definitely an influence here. But Yukio Futsugi, I think maybe I'm close, maybe, wanted close. Something. Yeah. Their team, who were brainstorming while they were waiting on their dev kits to arrive for the Sega Saturns, were interested in doing something like Star Fox, but they wanted to make it where you could look all the way around. Why not? You're rendering the 3D world anyway around it. Why not allow you to look all the way around?
Yeah, you're still on rails, but you could do like it was like a cone, a wider cone. And right. And by the way, if you've played games since like Rez is amazing. Mm-hmm. Rez for the Dreamcast, and then there's versions now on everything. You can get on PC even. I think Game Pass, or no, PlayStation's mid-tier plus program has it right now. But anyway, they're a fantastic game. And they're basically, I don't even know if there is a Rez without Panzer Dragoon there. It's almost the same kind of control. You lock on to characters. You also fire independently. When you lock on, you just have to scan over the enemies and let loose. And then
that was my favorite part, learning that there was two different modes. There's the rider on the back who can shoot with his gun. But then if you want to really make it fun, you have the dragon blow out some stuff. And so you paint the screen. You have a reticle on screen and you just paint over it all the bad guys, and they get selected. And it's so satisfying. Going,
yep.
And then you let it go. You let loose and it just sends all these heat-seeking missiles right at the guys and just destroys them.
Now, for live folks or people on video archive, you're seeing this now, but that water, if you stare at that water too long, you can give yourself a headache. It's rough.
You'll lose your mind because it's early water, but it's not bad.
It's not bad. They did say, it just has a weird shift to it. So when you move, it's just moving with you, and it's like, oh, gosh, I have a headache now. Thanks, game. Thanks, video game.
Part of it's because of how the Saturn delivers the graphics. So it does have, they said three processors. I thought there was four, but maybe there is three. So there's two processors.
Yeah.
A couple of, you know, graphics processors that are doing some stuff, not GPUs specifically, but
I mean, back then GPU was not, that would have been a term that would have been a little ambiguous, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Well, so what's the GPU? This, yeah.
So there's some of the CPUs, one of them is doing one thing and one is doing another. And this is the reason why this stupid system was so hard to program for too, by the way. It was, you know, had all these, had all these processors going on and processing data and putting it out in different ways. But this is a Team Sega jam. So the in-house Sega developers making this thing.
Yep.
So they had the inspiration.
And they also had a lot on the line. They had to try to make this console sell. And especially in Japan, they had like, you know, a lot of competition at the time, you know. Sony's coming out with their PlayStation 1 and also pushing 3D in a way that the Saturn kind of got cut unaware. They were like, oh shit, 3D.
I was shocked that the Atari Jaguar was actually one of the things that kind of helped destroy the Sega Saturn. I didn't know that until I was watching. I watched a huge, it's like a 4-5 hour documentary that on YouTube. I think it's called I Finished a Game. I believe it's called. It's like I Finished a Game is the name of the YouTube channel.
Oh, the channel. Yeah.
And it's like, it was like a 4 or 5 hour documentary on the whole history of Panzer Dragoon and what happened to the Sega Saturn, how it was all intimately tied together, and how the announcement of the PlayStation kind of put so much pressure on Sega at the time that they started making a lot of missteps, and what they had originally planned just shifted completely. And that's the reason why we got like the 32X bullshit and the Sega CD and all this other stuff that went on. Great documentary.
It's I finished a Video Game is the name of the channel. And go check that out. That looks great. They got a big Castlevania one that I've seen. I didn't know this was them.
Oh, yeah. Huge.
Complete history and review. These are long. 7 hours?
I said, the one I listened to was like 5 hours, and it was, interesting just about the whole time.
That's great. Here's some sound from Panzer Dragoon 1. I remember that like yesterday.
Yeah.
That weird voice. I remember that. And this music.
The music. Oh my God. The music is
you know
so
what?
Good.
I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb here and say this is some of the best music of that era and would hold up today. Yeah. It's extremely good.
Yeah.
I don't know who the composer is. I meant to look that up.
I had it in my notes and now I don't see it.
I don't see it either.
If the original soundtrack is amazing, it's throughout the whole series. I'm stalling for time and just not seeing it. But it is definitely one of the biggest parts of what makes this game fantastic and cinematic.
It wouldn't surprise me if somebody turned around and said, hey, Scott, that's the same guy who did this Final Fantasy or this Chrono Trigger track or, you know, something like that, because it's that quality. It's just top-notch stuff. And
so, the soundtrack was outsourced to Yoshita Azuma.
Yoshita Azuma.
Who scored the game with a mixture of orchestral and synthesizer tracks. Doesn't say much about him, though.
Yuzura Yuzima. Hold on.
Yeah. Did I say it right? Who knows?
I don't know. But anyway,
like Zima, though.
If you got some time, the entire soundtrack's on YouTube and it's a worthy playlist. Just go listen to that stuff. It's fantastic. I was playing it a bit before the show today, so some of our
Yoshitaka. How did I say it? I said it a while ago.
Yoshitaka.
I definitely am reading it now.
Yeah.
Azuma.
There you go. Yeah, so you nailed it. You nailed it.
The music guy.
Yeah, he did a really good job. So this game's really good. I'll say playing it, if you're looking for a retro on rails sort of, not Space Harrier, but like if you want to see the origins of Rez, which is really amazing and some people think is like the first of its kind, I'm going to give credit to Panzer Dragoon for that vibe.
Totally.
It's also just got a real, like, ethereal, new kind of world. It didn't feel like every other video game's world. It felt like we were doing some new shit. And
we were doing some new shit, baby.
It deserves more credit than it got. It just is a bummer that, you know, I do think if people think about that era and think about the Saturn, they do think about Panzer Dragoon. You can't help not to.
Oddly enough, I knew zero going into Panzer Dragoon. I'd heard you mention it a few times. Mm-hmm. I did not own a Sega Saturn, so I totally missed out on this entire thing. And I am so glad you introduced me to it because it changes nothing and everything all at the same time. I couldn't afford, and this is what we're going to talk about, the preservation as well while we're talking about this. This is why preservation is so important. Since the Sega Saturn did not do fantastic in the United States, they didn't publish a lot of these. In order to get an official Panzer Dragoon, you're going to spend about $1,000 for your Sega Saturn. To get a U.S. Release.
Look at your little preview. Pick up, that's awesome.
Yeah, I got a Panzer Dragoon playable review, which was on eBay for about $10-$15. So I could at least get a firsthand look on my actual real Sega Saturn. It's only got one episode. I think there's like six episodes. The game's not that long to begin with. It's only like an hour and a half to 5 hours if you're wanting to be a completionist. And this only has one episode, so it's worth about maybe 15, 20 minutes of my time. Totally worth the $10 or $15 that I paid to get a firsthand experience on real hardware. But if preservation, good Lord, if we don't preserve these kind of games and we lose these kind of games like the film industry did in their early years, it's going to be sad because this is a true piece of artwork.
I totally agree. There's something I was going to say about that. What was it? I was going to say that game, and I can't think of it, so forget it.
I did post Yoshitaka a picture in the Discord chat that we're having, and he's fantastic. He's talking on this old school corded phone for some reason on his his fandom wiki page.
That's great.
But he was the composer for Panzer Dragoon, and they don't talk a lot about what else he did here other than the Panzer Dragoon. But I think he was mostly working in film. And he hooked up with Team Andromeda, which was the in-house Sega team, which went on to be Smilebit from most of those guys.
This is great, though. This photo makes him seem like a badass. I love it.
That is such a badass picture. He's got this nice little mustache going on. He's got his hair all kind of flopped into his face.
Yeah.
And he's holding this old-school corded phone, but it's not like one of the rounded phones like you would have seen like on a dial type phone where you like rotary. That's what I'm thinking of, rotary. Looks like one of the later models when everything got all square.
Yeah,
you have push buttons like those early push button square phones, and he's got like this big pop collar and everything.
Yeah, he's awesome. Amazing. He's about to something's going down in that photo.
And man, you can just he just exudes badassery, and I love the music.
Well, he makes great music, makes I can tell game. You that. All right, now this was 1995, as we mentioned. Let's swing over 1 year later. This is how quick things turned around in this era. 1 year later, we get Panzer Dragoon 2 Zwei. How is that spelled? I know it's a common thing used for actually a bunch of games have this. Z-W-E-I. I've never understood it. I don't know how to say it. Is it Zwei?
I think it's pronounced Zwei. I'm sure we're going to get people telling us that we've totally butchered it. That's fine. You know what I just started doing? I just said, bump it. Most people I talked to said just called it Panzer Dragoon.
Let's see what the internet says. How to pronounce Zwei. We're going to find a thing. Zwei. Here it is. Here's some audio.
Zwei.
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 Zwei. Zwei. That's Zwei. What I was thinking. Yeah. Okay. I thought I remembered it correctly.
Maybe, but, let's see. This one's even more tight.
Zwei.
Okay, Zwei.
Zwei.
How about this one?
See, that Zwei. Sounds more German to me.
It does sound German.
Zwei.
Yeah.
Maybe it is. But Panzer is also German.
Zwei.
This is true. That's a good point.
Two.
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 Oh, that means two.
So oh, that's Dragoon 2.
That's
two?
The translation. Yeah, no, that's an actual
get
translation.
Get out of here. That is fan-freaking-tastic.
And
didn't
it
know
is
that.
German, by the way. It's German origin.
It is German.
Okay, we learned a little something there, folks.
There you go. We learned stuff.
That's weird they called it Panzer Dragoon 2-2 then.
Yeah, 2-2. So maybe they didn't call it that way originally, and then they was like, that's going to be confusing to the Americans. You better put a 2 in there, or they're not going to know what they're talking about.
Now, if you were hoping for a bunch of dialogue, I got bad news for you. they didn't do that. They did this. A little more intense, a little more military, you know?
Yeah. Different musician here.
Yeah, different musician, different. It had a very different sound vibe. I own this game also because I love the first one. And I thought, well, this is cool. Right. And this is still a pretty good game. The biggest problem I have with 2 is they really leaned into, well, maybe this isn't a bad thing. They really leaned into the arcade bits and just kind of ignored the lore. It was just like, here's a shooter. We made a shooter again. And if you only have a year to make your sequel, I guess that makes sense. You're not really going to go crazy with new story stuff. But
they introduced a little bit of story here because this is a prequel. So it's supposed to have happened 30 years before. When you play one of the most memorable parts of playing Panzer Dragoon from 1995 on the Sega Saturn is the introduction. It's kind of cryptic in the way it's delivered. But once you've watched it a couple of times, you realize, I'm nobody. I'm on a hunt. But I witnessed a great battle between two dragons and this dragon rider, and the dragon rider gets killed. And in his last move, he hands over a mental story to you so that you know what's going on and you know how to go forward in the story. And this second one is all about getting to that point. So this one ends where the first one takes off.
Right.
And so here we get to see something unique. We get to see the backstory of what happened to these dragons that are genetically modified creatures,
right,
that are being programmed by a tower. And so it's modifying their DNA to become dragons and battle beasts, which is how they waged war in the first age. And so in this one, you start as nobody, you watch your village to get destroyed, right? Typical adventuring stuff. You're like, you're rebelling against everything, and you see your village get destroyed, and you go on a mission, and we watch this this creature you have slowly morph from walking on land, which is some of those unreal things we saw when we first started, to getting into the air.
And yeah, that is one thing that set it apart. You have this land bit in the early episodes,
yeah,
that was not in the first game. First game, you're always flying. Graphically, yeah, it's an improvement, I would say. I think it's a prettier game than 2.
I think so too. They really got their character design really nailed down, mm-hmm, at this point.
Yeah. And there's a smoothness to the dragon in particular that just, yeah, did not. The first one looked like a rickety 3-polygon mess. This one looks more, yeah, like, I don't know, you could see this working today almost. It's not bad, you know?
Yeah. There was a lot of prototyping going on in the first one, right? It's like, oh, what if we did this? What if we did that? And they learned lessons and then they applied to the second one, because already where you're looking like that thing was talking about in the first one, where you kind of paint the screen, where you paint over the bad guys with your reticle and then you launch out into it. It works so well here. We get into berserk stuff where, mm-hmm, like it's kind of like almost like a saving throw. Like before you die, you have one last opportunity to berserk out and to kill the enemy.
Yep. And this is a game that would have benefited greatly from analog control. They didn't have that yet. On this device.
Would they have had they definitely didn't apply it to this game. Did they have the,
I don't think the Knights into Knights into Dreams thing was out yet, but I could be wrong. I can't remember,
right,
what year that was.
Trying to remember as well.
But it wasn't, I don't think it was there. It certainly didn't have support for it. It was a bit like Wipeout XL, as much as that was an incredible racing game, for no one knows reasons why that thing never got analog support when the DualShock launched. Yeah.
They would have been the same year. Knights in the Dreams, the Sonic team, finally got their game out the door.
Gotcha. They probably weren't talking.
It would have been the same year.
They probably weren't talking, those two.
Definitely probably were not talking.
And they were down the hall from each other, but nobody bothered to walk out and say, hey,
got over there? You got some 3D controls. Yeah,
what's that about? What's that huge black plate you're holding in your hand? Anyway, it's a good game. I think it plays better than the first. I personally thought the story was a little weak. I thought it was just like undersold compared to the first game.
They definitely are looking at a lot more. It's a lot faster, a lot more action. And this is partly where they kind of let loose. We got to remember, this is early 3D. So not only do you have to wonder what you're capable of making, you've got to wonder if the gamer can understand the gameplay. And in the first one, the action was a lot slower because people were learning how to navigate in 3D on consoles. So you're kind of training your audience. And then by the time we get to the second one, you see that people are, you know, they're getting it.
You forget about those early days of 3D really were a change of visual language, right? Like we had to say, okay, now wait a minute. And a little bit like VR now, right? You have to communicate in a different way. You have to,
right,
decide what's actually fun in there. And sometimes it turns out simpler things, like in VR, for example, simpler things are more fun than they are in just a regular flat screen. Like, right, for example, you just shooting at waves of enemies on a flat screen is kind of boring and old. We've been doing that for 30 years, 40 years or whatever. You do it in VR and it's like, oh, wait, now I'm immersed in a way that I've never been before. Suddenly a you know, waves and waves of enemies like Space Invaders, but it's me in a helmet with two guns in my hand, is suddenly very compelling. And right, I felt like there was a similar transition here of like, well, how did this play in 2D? We have some examples, mm-hmm, but not great ones. So how is this going to work?
That was like our first attempts at 3D, and lots of teams that were developing games during that time. That's how they approached it. They, you know, they had been making games, platformers, for a decade, and it's like, well, what do we want to do? Well, we want to make 3D, but what are we going to make? A platformer in 3D? Okay, mm-hmm, that only translates so far, right?
Yeah, yeah.
in, yeah, but oh my God, this game is so up close, and the monsters are so big.
They're really cool. Yeah.
I really dug it. I had, like I said, I'd never played any of these games. I enjoyed the first one in Saga probably more. I did appreciate this second one, but I didn't spend nearly as much time in it. It did feel like it was more game focused, and I was really getting wrapped up in this kind of, you know, it's very derivative, the story. It was influenced by a whole bunch of stuff, but seeing it in this early 3D form is compelling.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you want to get weird? Let's get weird.
Oh, we should get weird.
2 years later.
It is 30 years. It's actually 30 years after the first one.
Yeah. In the game, yes. But in real world, we were going to get a new game in 2 years, and I'll explain that in a second. But you know what blew my mind yesterday? I was thinking about the years here. 1995 right. is the year Panzer Dragoon came out.
Mm.
In my head, that couldn't be further from things like, say, NHL 94 right. on the Sega Genesis. To me, those are decades apart.
Oh, yeah.
But they're literally a year apart. That's mind-blowing to me that within a year, I had gone from Genesis full-time, nonstop, can't stop, love it, let's play NHL 94 tonight, to I've got the damn Saturn, let's play Saturn games. It's just nuts to me that because in my memory, it's so far apart, those things.
Right.
But in reality, it was like probably 11 months between them, you know?
Yeah. And it seems so odd, especially with the Sega releases, because we had the Genesis, and then they released the Model 2, and then they, you know, and then they started releasing crazy intermediate things like the CD and the 32X, and it's just like something was like just constantly coming out so weird.
Right. Hey guys, I'd like to take a second to talk about our hot new friends. I say hot because I just had one of them and it was very hot. Over at Factor. I love them. Now that it's summer, right? It's getting warm. You might be looking for wholesome, convenient meals for sunny, active days. Well, Factor's America, you know, Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit. With them, you can help fuel up fast with flavorful, nutritious, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door, and you save time, eat well, and stay on track reaching your goals. And this June, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle, right? Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals directly to your door. Ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/retro50 and use the code retro50 to get 50% off your first box. You might just be so busy this year, you don't have time to cook or, you know, plan that all out, right? Well, with Factor, you skip the trip to the grocery store, skip the chopping, the prepping, the cleaning up, all that stuff, while still getting all the flavor and nutrition you need. Never frozen, always fresh. These meals are really awesome. And they're ready in just 2 minutes. Like literally, heat and eat. Mm-mm. Then you can get back outside and enjoy that warm weather, you know? You can choose from 34 plus chef-prepared, dietitian-approved weekly options. They feature premium ingredients such as broccoli, leeks, truffle butter, broccolini, asparagus. Plus, you can round out your meal and replenish your snack supply with an assortment of 45 plus add-ons, including breakfast items like delicious apple cinnamon pancakes, bacon and cheddar egg bites. Oh, those are good. And potato, bacon, and egg breakfast skillet. Mmm! Or for an easy wellness boost, try refreshing beverage options like cold-pressed juices, shakes, and smoothies. Oh, they make a killer smoothie. Looking to pack in more protein? Conveniently add on filler options like salmon fillets or, I don't know, chicken wings to your favorite Factor meals to support your nutritional goals any time of the day. Head to factormeals.com/retro50 and use code retro50 to get 50% off your first box. That's code retro50 at factormeals.com/retro50. Okay, easy to remember. And you get 50% off that first box. Go there today. Let's talk about this next one because things got weird. All right, things got very weird.
Oh, yeah. Things are about to get. So if you like on-rail shooters, then you're really going to not be too happy.
You're going to be bummed out.
You're going
to
be bummed.
But if you're like me and you like people to branch out and try new things, then you might be stoked. Here's what they did next. It's called, well, I'll play this. I'll play the audio first. All right. As you can see, what I'm showing on video and what you're hearing in audio, a little bit different. Let's play a little of this. So once again, we're hearing, you know, some decent music and all of that. You might think, well, Scott, what's the difference? They made a turn-based Japanese RPG, JRPG game.
What a first-person JRPG. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's literally like you even have random battles. You'll be flying through the air, and you'll suddenly go do-do-do-do-do like you're used to in Final Fantasy VII or something. And you will now be fighting, I don't know, four creatures. And those four creatures are flying around you. And you will take your turn. And you will use an ability or an attack or a heal or whatever. And then they'll take their turn. Like, really, literally, quite literally, think old Final Fantasy, but applied to Panzer Dragoon, the world and the story and whatever. Right. And I remember this being very jarring in 98.
Yeah.
And not knowing what to do with myself. And I didn't get it. I didn't buy it because I was like, what are they doing? But today, I would be so into this concept. I'd be so into this. And I'm a little bummed that I didn't take advantage of it back then. But they made a turn-based JRPG.
And it's not, I was worried when I read it. When I read the description, I was like, oh, shit. And I was like, random encounters? How's that going to play out?
Yeah.
And it's actually really cool because when you hit a random encounter, instead of just, you know, standing there and going through a bunch of, you know, like, what I imagined was like, oh, so I'm going to have some, you know, have some screen where my dragon is just floating there, floaty floats, and I've got to go through some menus and stuff and select an attack, and then it'll, you know, activate it, and then, you know, it'll do the little movements. It's not like that. No. It's like real time. It's real time. So when you're flying along, you do have some where you're still doing rail shooting, but then when you get into a real big fight, you'll, like an encounter, you'll have this option to, it is like a cutscene where you're just kind of floating along,
right?
But you'll have things where you can use the D-pad to rotate your position around the enemy to get into position to activate your powers.
Or to aim for weak spots on the creatures. So sometimes it's like, well, you need to rotate around here to hit this little weak underbelly thing. They're showing it right now. The timing on the systems work a little bit like Final Fantasy VI. I don't know when Final Fantasy added I forgot the name of their battle system, but it's like basically little timers, they're like cooldowns.
Right.
And when the cooldown would come up, then you could choose your ability. And if you didn't hurry up, the creature might get too off before you made up your mind. This uses a system very similar to that.
Right. Right. But it really leaned into the 3D part, which was, I wasn't sure how they was going to do it. And you do, if you're in front of the enemies, you become you're more susceptible to their attacks. If you go to the side, usually you'll have kind of a middle attack. But if you get behind them and you, like you said, find the weak spots, and their weak spots can change too, based on how long it takes you. They may reposition when you're trying to go through your menu system and trying to pick your attack. There's some shortcuts to do the attacks quickly, but it's all energy based. And, you know, if you have enough energy to do it, and if you're going to execute it, you got spells, you got heals for your character. You have all the stuff, but it feels a lot more organic. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like you're navigating through menus and stuff.
Less static than those games did at the time, for sure.
Right.
And I think it reviewed well, like critics really liked it.
All of these games reviewed well. They were just all really well designed, great gameplay, moderately good storytelling.
Yeah,
even if it was derivative, it was interesting storytelling.
That was compelling. I agree. I think this. I wouldn't. You know, there's this mode right now. Everyone's remaking stuff. Final Fantasy VII got a remake. They just talked yesterday at the Nintendo Direct about Super Mario RPG getting a remake, and these are all great. I love that they're doing this. I would personally be stoked if Sega said, we're bringing Panzer Dragoon Saga back. Oh, by the way, we never said the name. It's Panzer Dragoon Saga is the name of the game.
Right.
We're bringing it back. We're remaking it from the ground up. I would be out of my mind excited.
This is the one that you could remake. This has got enough modern sensibilities. It's complex enough that you could do it. The first two are rail shooters, which are interesting and fascinating. Maybe a good good thing to do in VR, in which they had actually started doing.
Yeah.
There, I believe it was Haruta Watanabe, which is an interesting story in itself. He was working on a VR version of this, and then it was reported he was dead. I think it was called Panzer Dragoon Voyage Record. And it was it ended up being canceled because he died and he was the lead behind all this stuff. But then come to find out that wasn't true. And so I don't know what the real story was.
Yeah.
But we almost had, or still possibly could, I suppose, if something is resurrected from that. But I think that was back in 2021. They kind of canceled, but we had a lot of shit going on in 2021. Who knows?
Did they report he died from I don't know.
They didn't say. They just said he was dead.
Like,
and so
COVID
I was like,
kind
and they
of thing
said, canceled.
Wow. All right.
It's one of those things where somebody probably said, oh, yeah, they canceled it. And it's like, well, why did they do it? Well, that one guy's pretty old. He probably died.
Because he's old.
And then it becomes fact.
Yeah.
And then you're like, no, that's not what happened at all. But I'm with you. Saga is definitely the one that is ripe for remake.
And yeah, I'd play it.
I don't know if enough people know about it to make it possible, but God, I would love it. After playing it this week, I'm a convert. I would be the first in line.
Yeah, if you want to play a real ugly take, play the Game Gear version. I'm showing it on screen right now. This is called Panzer Dragoon Mini. It was like a Space Harrier type deal. I mean, the game is kind of Space Harrier anyway.
Yeah, this rolls it back to the Space Harrier that you would have seen before Sega Saturn, right? This is more like this is the Game Gear, which is basically the Master System in portable form. So if you think of Space Harrier on the Master System, that's what you're getting.
That's
here.
What you're getting here. Yeah.
A little reticle. The same you year, move it around. I believe, is
yeah.
two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have made sense, though, right?
What's weird?
What's funny about this one, though, or one of the interesting things about it, is it was developed in the West, but only sold in Japan. You couldn't get it here.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
We were doing Sega was doing some weird stuff about, you know, where they were released stuff. It's kind of an odd thing anyway.
Yeah.
It's like how do you know Americans respond to Japanese imports? Does it have an impact? Is it better? Does it have more cachet?
Right.
What is
I don't know. I think back then the markets were considered so vastly different and the tastes so different they'd rename stuff, or they wouldn't release it in those territories at all. And I just think it was
nobody in the U.S. was okay. I won't say nobody. A lot of the U.S. people in 1998 consumers were not interested in RPG at that time.
There were a few big ones, but you're right. Like there were many games, including even big names like Final Fantasy 2, 3, and 4 were never released. Or is that, I may have that wrong, but it's something like that where the whole string of them weren't even released here and then came later. And then they renamed it. Like Final Fantasy 3 is actually 4, I think.
Yeah, something crazy like that. I used to know the numbers and stuff, but
yeah, I forget. You're right. Even in those mainstream ones that are considered classics in the genre, they were often slow. They didn't think that America had the appetite for it, or Europe for that matter.
Yeah.
And it turns out we did and do, and we love them now. You know, many people consider those to be all-time classics. So I don't know. It's an interesting way. It's just interesting to see how that stuff played out. It was all financial reasons. Yeah. You know, I mean, is it going to sell there or is it not? And is it worth doing localization and all the translation and everything else? And sometimes it isn't. So they don't do it.
It's tough if you're thinking about it. If you're trying to develop a game, and if the two or three markets you're really focusing on is, you know, at odds with what they find, you know, popular, that could be tough.
Yeah.
And that's we saw that happening because Sega would, like we had said earlier in the show, they were struggling in Japan in doing gangbusters outside of Japan, and they wanted that. The Japanese arm of the company wanted that recognition as well, and so it brought a lot of animosity. And so, you know, this really interesting reads and documentary listens and stuff for that kind of stuff.
Did you have a chance at all to play the Xbox game Panzer Dragoon Orta from 2002?
I did not. I stopped because to me, everything that I read, Panzer Dragoon kind of lived and died on the Sega Saturn. But it did go onto the Xbox but I did not play it, but it went back to its roots of rail shooting, right?
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. I played it on the Xbox at the time. I was really stoked that it had come back. And by now, I think we had, maybe we still didn't have Rez. I think Rez was Dreamcast. But Dreamcast was already out. I don't remember. Whatever came first. But I remember being excited and going, oh, bring back this classic. This sounds like fun. The replay you're seeing here is someone's playing on a widescreen with 60 frames, and this is not how it looked.
It sure is pretty. It makes me question why we would need a remake if I could just play this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, or to, it's just like the first two games. Like, there's, that's what this game is. I would have been happier had the Saga thing happened on a more modern console, but it's fine. It's good.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Xbox original, OG Xbox, I should say. Mm-hmm. And nobody else got it, which is crazy. It was some Sega deal they had with them, and I don't even think the Dreamcast had it. I think this was all post Dreamcast. Dreamcast had died by now, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
by O2, that would have been right.
O2
bummer. I love my Dreamcast so much. I was so bummed.
Yeah, I think I picked up a Dreamcast in 01 for about $50 new at Fry's.
Jeez, really?
Yeah.
I waited in line until I don't know, 6 a.m. or whatever at Software, et cetera, for them to open and give me one for the full 200 or whatever it was.
Yeah. For the full two. No, yeah. I paid like 50 and I picked up, I forget how many games. I picked up four controllers. Damn. I was like, you guys are giving this stuff away. Gimme.
I would have done that had I known better, but I didn't. I thought this was Sega's moment. I really did. I thought, okay, all right, we're in a new vein here. We're going to make the Dreamcast be the big winner forever. Nope.
Mm-hmm. Nope. It made me sad when Sega couldn't quite pull it together.
And again, it was mostly because they had just internal bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't because the games were bad. It wasn't because the machine wasn't capable and the climate it was in. And
they kept trying to beat people to market. It was weird. It was, like I said, I feel like everything was just not about financial dollars, because I even now, looking back and reading, and I've been reading The Console Wars again, which is a great book or audiobook if you haven't heard it, talking all about that time period when Sega and Nintendo was really going at it, and then Sony stepped in and said, hold my beer, and it was just a wild time. And it just seemed like everything was like, it was such a, we got to get it to market first, and I'm like, but I don't think that's gonna benefit you the way you think it is. I don't think getting to market holds you anything other than being first. I don't think you necessarily have to be first to be the most successful. And maybe they just didn't know that then.
I totally agree.
Maybe it just seemed like it.
You know what, it's someone out there hates Apple, so they're not going to like to hear this, but this is what Apple does so well. They're rarely first,
right?
But when they enter into it, they're often best. So when you do, you know, when you look at the MP3 player market at the time the iPod was released, you know, there was a bunch of those, and they all turned out to be kind of shitty compared to the iPod. So it was like, that's how they'll do it. They did it with phones and smartphones. They weren't the first phone on the market that did fancy smart things, but they came out with like all arms swinging. So if you're a company, like I would argue Sony is a good example in the game space of this. They didn't have to be first to market with stuff. They just had to be, in their time, the best in market, right? And they've done really well with
having
that.
Having the most complete vision is probably Apple's strongest point. Having this complete vision, setting up an entire ecosystem around this vision, and then executing. Right. So they never half-ass it when they come in.
No, when they come in, they're like ready to go. And they have they can afford to do that because of years of successfully doing that. Not everybody can. And I just think first to market sometimes is worst to market. If you do like, was it called? On Live? Remember that streaming service?
I loved 2012? On Live. It was the first time I realized that I liked watching other people play video games online. I thought that was amazing.
Best
part of the service.
And you were streaming games. You know, it's basically Game Pass, xCloud, but the OG version of it. And now there's a million ways to do that, and none of them are on Live. That thing's gone.
Being you know? First only gets you... the respect maybe, or the notoriety, the attention possibly. It definitely doesn't get you anything else. And if for anybody writes in and says, "Everybody wants your Apple fanboys," I hate Apple just as much as I hate everybody else.
I love Apple. I like their products. I like them. I'll admit it. I do. I really like them. They've helped me in all the stuff I do. But the point of it is, Brian and I hate We hate waving flags with corporate logos on. We talked about this the pre-show today. It's stupid. Don't be culty about the products you buy. Who gives a shit?
Right.
Buy what you need. Buy what you want. Look, here's the deal that I know for sure. The iPhone wouldn't have been a huge success, and the Android ecosystem would not have been a huge success without BlackBerry being first with a whole bunch of things and then having their ass kicked. So once again, first is worst. It's just a bad place to be. In some ways, you innovate and you're like the big bomb, and then people shit all over you. That's why when everybody gets so excited about ChatGPT and OpenAI, I go, just be careful. If you're going to align yourself really closely with them, I'm a little worried they're first to worst and everybody else will come and overtake them. You know, MySpace, there's a million of these examples. Somebody doing a thing that's like changes the course of everything, and then big money comes in and does it better and takes it away.
Yeah.
Like it
or
not.
Did you see the Quest?
The way it is.
Did you see the Quest? Yeah, that wasn't always called the Quest. It was called the Oculus.
Yeah, they got it.
And it was first.
Yeah,
and it was amazing.
It was. And they bought it. And now it is what it is. That might be a good example of how.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of the same problem though, right? They got bought out, but it's not different than getting killed, sort of.
even OpenAI is owned by a bunch of other biggies that are implementing it. Like if you think OpenAI is just you know, independent, it's not. It's got a lot of Microsoft money,
big Microsoft money,
and they've implemented that into their own Bing search engines and their own chat and everything. Yeah. I usually say whenever I recommend anything, I always go for my use case.
Yeah.
And then I finish up, you know, what I like and what I use it and how I use it. That may not fit into your use case. You may be totally different than me. You may use it totally different.
Fair enough.
Like these Ambernix, I said my use case was I love the HDMI output, but you might like the Miu Mini Plus because it has the wireless.
Yeah. Do it works for you. Quit being fanboys. Yeah. Just do what works for you.
Do it, fanboys.
Yeah, dumb fanboys. All right, let's move on to something. Oh, real quick here. You put a note on here saying, what can I play right now that's like this? And you wrote Dragon Quest, and I take issue with that. This is nothing like Dragon Quest other than there's dragons in it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's the reason why I put that in there. I actually did that as a placeholder. I was like, Dragon Quest.
Dragon Quest. So the one I'm going to recommend is that Res. I don't know. I can't remember the name of the new version that's like super high def and is on PlayStation Network.
Right.
But whatever that is, Res is the spiritual and king of this. It's the best of these, like, sweep enemies to mark them, launch a bunch of shit at them, do it through a crazy 3D world. It is still an amazing experience. And that thing is VR capable. At least PSVR 1 had it. I don't know if this is elsewhere now, but can't say enough good things about Res. I love Res. So go play that. R-E-Z.
So not Dragon?
Not Dragon Quest. It's really nothing like Saga, maybe, because it's a turn-based RPG, but other than that, not really in the same ballpark. But I love that you used it. That's amazing.
Yeah. Like I said, I think that was, I was definitely in a hurry that day.
I also think by the time Saga came out, I had moved on to my PlayStation and N64 life.
Yeah, absolutely, because that was late. So Benefit, we talk about this a good bit, Panzer Dragoon Saga, came late in the Sega Saturn's life because it was a very short life because they did not have success that they wanted to outside of Japan. And so they moved to the Dreamcast very quickly. 98 would have been very end of life, but they really had a really good understanding of the hardware by this point in time, which is good because the Sega Saturn architecture is kind of complicated, multiple CPUs and display processors that handle different parts of it and then hand off other parts of it. It's really interesting to see how it functioned. And I tried playing this on my Mr. FPGA, which is an early core version of that. And it would not run.
It wouldn't run?
It would not run worth the trash. And I tried all kinds of different versions of it. And that's not a ding against the Mr. or the core that is in really, really, really early access. It's just a testament to the complication of how complicated this game is. Yeah. I had to fire up a regular PC to emulate a good bit of this other than the parts that I played from that real playable preview. And like, this is why it's so important for this game preservation, because these games are outside the ability for the average person to purchase. And, you know, Sega is not releasing this in some kind of new format, so we need these games to be preserved or we're gonna lose them.
That's right. Get in there, preservation people, make it happen.
Make it happen.
All right, we're going to move on from that and talk about this week's version of what we like to call Guess My Game.
Destroy it.
We're going to guess a little gamage here. Oh, by the way, I just noticed this, so I'm going to send a picture to you. Hold on. So some of you may notice Brian's camera angle changed today a little bit. And
oh, yeah, I am a different angle. That's my bad.
It looks like you're talking to me. Yeah, look at that. Isn't that great?
But when are you going to turn to the side so I can see you?
I know, right? Wait, let's see.
Yeah, yeah, I did turn it. I turned my camera around further on purpose. And usually I am playing my game over here on this screen. Yeah. But I just happened to pull my notes up and I turned towards my notes instead of facing you. So I'm going to pull my notes over this side.
You do whatever you want. You're good.
Feeling uncomfortable.
No, I feel fine.
Like,
totally.
He doesn't like talking to the side of my face.
Totally so comfortable. I only notice it when I check the stream. It's not even a thing. It's not a big deal at all. All right, let's get to this. We bring clips from old games and we try to guess what each other brought. I'm going to start and I'm going to keep us in the same ballpark here. This is a Sega Saturn game from 1996. And I will say of its genre, it was the best that console ever had in its genre. There's your hint, early hint. All right.
Well, okay. While you're pulling that up, I'm going to frantically try to remember what the hell.
You don't remember your game?
For mine. No, let me see.
You're going to have to guess your own game. History. I love when Brian has to guess his own game. That's always fun.
Well, I usually can remember it from the time I do it that morning to the nighttime, but then we delayed.
Oh,
I'm like,
right.
I'm like,
I know it's a lot,
ago.
Dude. It's a lot. It's days ago.
Yeah, that was days ago.
Freaking Wednesday, for hell's sakes. Yeah, while you're thinking of that.
Yeah, do it.
I know
give me the feed.
Yours is PC 97, so I don't know if that helps you. But anyway, here it is. Oh, shit, I almost gave it away. Here is the Saturn game from 1996 that Brian will now guess with even more hints I didn't intend to give him. All right, here it is.
During the time of the pharaohs, the city of Karnak was a shining example of civilization that all other nations could only hope to emulate. Today, Karnak lives on, surrounded by the spirits of the past.
All right. Any guesses?
What year
so
was
far?
This again? This is for Sega Saturn.
Sega Saturn, 1996.
This feels like, is this a rail shooter?
I will take off the word, this is your first question, I will take off the word rail and say yes, it is a shooter.
It is a shooter, okay.
But it is not rails. On
wasn't
rails.
Karnak like? Wasn't that like Johnny Carson's act?
Yeah.
Karnak, was this a nod to that?
I'll say that's your quest. Second question. No, it's not a nod to Johnny Carson's Karnak.
Okay, so I didn't have a Sega Saturn. So
whoa, sorry, I was loud. It was also on PC, if that helps.
Okay, it was on PC. That may help. I don't recognize any of the audio. Is it set in the Western world?
Western world, I'll say.
It feels like a Western of sorts.
I will say it's neither. You mean like a Western, like old U.S. West?
Yeah. U.S.
No,
Western, right.
Definitely not.
Oh, interesting.
Listen to this part of the top again just to help you. Wait.
Of the pharaohs. The city of Karnak was a shining.
So did you hear that part? During the time of the pharaohs.
The pharaohs.
And that, you've had your three, so now everything else is a guess here. And this guy's
Hotep.
This is the old mute. That's the old
example of civilization.
Bubba Hotep, the game. Because that sounds like the announcer for videos during that time.
Oh, yeah. For like movies and stuff, trailers. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what's his name. He has a famous name. Shit. Don LaFontaine, that's his name.
Okay.
He used to do all the, in a world, there's a thing
with
this
guy. Yeah, I recognize that voice. That was kind of confused me. I was trying to think if it's kind of a movie related, but yeah. Time Pharaohs. Pharaohs on a, is it Pharaohs for a Sega Saturn?
Let's see if that is correct. Is that correct? Nope, it is incorrect. The proper answer is Power Slave. Power Slave.
What the hell? What is Power Slave?
Oh,
I've never even heard of that.
Power Slave was awesome. The version for PC, I can't remember which version I had for sure, but I know the Saturn had the version everyone liked. And it was called, in Europe, they called it Exhumed.
What?
It was called Exhumed in Europe.
What the hell is this? What kind of game is it? I don't even...
It's a first-person shooter.
Cover art.
It's like Quake. quakeish.
Really?
Yeah. Let's see if I can find a good video.
No, but it's not. All I'm seeing on Power Slave is Iron Maiden.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, right? Is it's got the Iron Maiden name.
Get some crossover here. Let's see. Okay, so I looked up Game this time. Okay, Power Slave, Exhumed on Steam. Okay,
yeah, Exhumed.
Yeah, I see this. I don't remember anything about this, or at least if I do, I've totally forgotten. Yeah, you're right. It's that right in the center Doom looking, right in the center. That would be about the time, too, the Sega Saturn Doom clone.
Yeah,
right?
Totally Doom clone. It is straight up. Not Doom, I'd say Quake.
Quake.
It's more Quake.
Yes, Quake. Yeah, see Quake. Because
it's 3D.
More screenshots.
You can look down and up, and
it's a fun
game, and it ran really well. Is the other thing is it was a console that was known for slow 3D. It was actually pretty great on there.
I might be getting this confused with something else. Use your hands as power stuff as from time to time. I might have played the Exhumed version on Steam.
Well, Exhumed is just the European name for it, so there's no. Okay. It's not
it's
like
just
a
Power Slave Exhumed. So it's not like a sequel or something.
No, that's them saying, "Hey, that old game that you called a different name and we called Power Slave, now it's one game and we're just calling it Power Slave Exhumed, and it's for all the Europeans and the Americans."
Apparently, it's pretty popular. They even got a Switch on here.
Yeah.
Limited run, 174. Oh, this must be something that they made specifically. Weird. What is this limited run thing? I don't know what this stuff is. Anyway, yeah I had no clue. You got me.
I gotcha.
You got me, Johnson. And while we were talking, I found through my history and I found what I did.
Oh, you found your deal. Okay, good. Well, I'm going to play your clip.
Oh, yeah.
This is what? PC the next year? PC 97, looks like?
PC 1997.
All right, let's check it out.
I need first aid.
Walking.
Ooh, did that hurt?
Hold on. I gotta hear that guy. What happened to him?
I'm a leg.
Ooh, did that hurt?
That hurt.
Okay, questions number one.
I loved this game when it came out. It blew me away with all that audio. Like, I mean, it wasn't like audio was new or anything, but just the quality of just the one-line stuff was just hilarious.
Is it a shooter? First-person shooter?
Well, it's not a first-person shooter. I'll tell you, it's an isometric top-down shooter.
Okay. That. No, that's good to know. Was it isometric top-down PC? Boy. Is it... I think I know what this is.
Give me it.
Let me use my second and third question. Was it big and was it controversial?
Oh yeah, totally controversial.
Okay. I think this is Postal.
It's Postal. That's right.
Is it Postal?
First one, 1997. Correct. Isometric top-down shooter, developed by Running with Scissors and published by Ripcord Games.
Oh man,
sequels 2, 3, and 4.
Brian, I still had a question left, and I still got it. Can you believe it?
Love this game.
Did anyone in the chat get it?
The chat.
Chat said blood.
Yes. Ron Wood got it first. Yes.
Oh, there it is. Ron Wood. Congratulations.
Yep.
You got it as well. So hold on a second. Someone in the chat said, when I said power for the game that I played, the Power Slave game, everyone was sure you'd get it because I said the word power.
I didn't get that at all.
That's amazing.
This one is Power Slave. If you just guess what it is.
Yeah. Can you guess what Power Slave is? That'd be great. All right. Well done, everybody. I feel good about my win this week.
Oh, so it's Skits.
Take that. Skits?
Yeah.
What happened?
That's who it is. And, I didn't recognize Ron's Skits from Twitch, but he's on YouTube.
He's on a different account, so he's Skits. Yes. Skits, good job. You're smarter than all of us. Well done. Now this. Whoops. Now this.
Welcome to the Treasure Room.
It's time for us to read an email from a listener. First of all, I would like to thank somebody. Michael Burrier sent some awesome garlic OS skins.
Oh,
I want to thank him for that.
I haven't got mine yet. Where is it? Is it in the Gmail? I need to get it.
I think it's in the Gmail. If you don't see it there, I'll send you this zip right now. In fact, I'll do it right now.
And if you don't know what garlic OS is what we're talking about, is for the Ambernic RG35XX, which a lot of us in the community have picked up recently. It's a nice little retro video game system, good at doing PS1 and games before. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
very nice.
It's very, very
really
cool.
Inexpensive. $70. I think it was on sale this past week for like about 10% off.
Yeah. So it's very rad, that thing. I love it. I've been using it literally every day. That's how much I
love it. Me too. It's actually sitting right in front of me right now, actually.
I love it. Can't get enough of it. So, the other thing I was going to say is big thanks to him. Again, that name is Michael Burrier. We also got Woojman. He's making something rad. So he's working on a ROM hack for Tecmo Bowl.
Oh, yes, right. Woosh, tell me about this. Yes.
Or Tecmo SB, I guess.
Right.
Anyway, he wants to, so he's putting us in it. We're going to have like teams based around like play retro themes and all that stuff. It's going to be an actual working NES ROM.
Nice.
And even works now what he's got so far. He asked me, hey, what do you think about putting patrons in there as players in the game?
Oh,
like all the teams idea. Fill out the rosters with the names of people who are on our Patreon. And I said,
that's a big bonus. Yes.
100% into that idea. I think that is awesome. So, I guess what I'm saying is, and this is, I promise this is not some cheap trick to get some of you to sign up, but if you sign up now, then you'll get included in this ROM hack and you'll be a part.
I do like cheap trick though.
Yeah. Cheap trick. They're pretty good in their heyday. So if you want to be on this thing, you want your name in there, sign up today. It can be any level. All right. We don't care which level you're on to do this, to be a part of this. And we'll put your name on these characters in this Tecmo Bowl. I keep saying Tecmo
Bowl. Woo's the man is being Woogie the Manish.
Yeah, Woogie the man. Thank you for that, dude. And he and I will be talking about when and how, but you got time.
That's exciting. So,
Patreon.com/playretro.
Ever since I saw that Grimace birthday thing last week, we talked about this on the Game Boy, I've been looking at that Game Boy application to program with, and I'm excited about that. Now, the NES, I know you have to pay like a fee and stuff, so good on you, Woosh.
Yeah.
But the Game Boy is a free one, and I'm messing around with it a little bit.
That'd be fun to mess with. Yeah, that'd be fun. Again, that's patreon.com/playretro, so sign up today. All right, here's an email we got from Matt from Dallas, who says, so I was born in 1980, and I grew up as a Nintendo baby, NES, SNES, N64. But I just recently had this random memory from that period of like 3 years where those Tiger handhelds with individual games were a thing.
Yes.
Just bringing it up because it occurred to me that these were retro and weird in their own weird category, but kind of forgotten. Maybe worth a look or a mention. Eulogy, perhaps. Ninja Turtles is the main one I remember, but I know I had several. Anyway, thanks for the show, Matt from Dallas. I would love to cover those stupid weird things.
I would too. And I run across them a good bit when we're looking at ports from certain eras. And it is, if you never played them before, they're little handheld things. They usually have like they just got a little LED blinking, not like LEDs like we think today, like the little LCD. No, what do they call them? The old type of like the watch faces and stuff would have. Is it LED? What do you call those things?
They were LCD.
LCD. Yeah, they're LCD. So
they were LCD.
You know, that's what I'm looking for. See, I can't even think of the words, but they would.
Go ahead.
But it was all it was. It was this little LCD screens that would have the bits would. It wasn't like a fully rendered screen. If you never played any of these Tiger Electronics hand games,
they basically were like Game & Watch Nintendo, the Nintendo Game & Watch stuff. Same thing.
And also, you could pick up for like around $20 and you could play. So if you couldn't afford the big deal, real handheld stuff, you could play one of these.
Yeah. And they weren't great, but they were thing that's worth talking about. I don't even know if we can we probably could do a full show about here are the top 10, you know, why people liked them, blah, 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 all that stuff.
I saw one this past week at the thrift store and almost picked it up.
Mr. Thrifty Store Picker-Upper Man.
Maybe I should have.
Maybe you should have. Matt from Dallas, thanks for the question. We will definitely be considering this as we move forward with the new episodes. If you'd like to leave an email of your own choosing, you can do that at playretroshow@gmail.com or you can text us 801-471-0462. You can also leave voicemails there if you are inclined to do so. Our next discussion will be the Atari System 2, Paperboy, and the 720 Skate or Die.
And the arcade that was Atari was doing their Atari System 2s, which had Paperboy, 720, Super Sprint, Championship Sprint, and All Points Bulletin. We've already covered the Sprint series, and I would love to do the APB. But for some reason, I remember Paperboy and 720 occupying the same space, even though they really weren't the same kind of game necessarily.
No, no, you're right, though. They felt like
they occupy the same space.
I kind of agree. Paperboy, 720 and Paperboy in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Those are games I have very fond feelings for.
Yeah. And Paperboy was, I didn't know that they used, remember that they had the Star Wars sit down game? They used a modified version of that stick for Paperboy.
Yeah. And they used probably the same damn engine because at least the Empire Strikes Back game felt like it was the same game. It felt like you were playing kind of a version of Paperboy. It was like top down quarter view, but you were going diagonally on your hover bike, you know, killing shit, and it felt like almost that you were playing the same game. It was really weird.
Yeah.
Anyway,
those in between shots of what you were doing and stuff, those were just so much.
It was really great. So yeah, we're going back to the arcade, everybody. And if you were a kid like me and you walked past the arcade and you heard Skate or Die. One of the great what do they call that? Call it an arcade game.
The track mode.
A track mode.
It's attracting you.
Yeah,
I was attracted to it.
There were three. There were three track modes that always worked for me. That one, Sinistar. I am Sinistar. Just all the talking that thing would do, and Marble Madness's weird little guitar riff.
Yes,
that would drive me in there as well.
God, we need to do our favorite track mode episode where we just
play them all. Yeah, I would love to go on a rip and just go find every one of those and make files.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that'll be next week. Atari System 2, Paperboy, 720, all that stuff. And we'll do it at our normal time, Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. And we'll be back to normal. So Wednesday evening, 3:30 Mountain Time, frogpants.tv if you want to watch us live, or just keep checking the podcast wherever you get it. It's Play Retro when you search. Or go to our website at frogpants.com/playretro. And again, patreon.com/playretro. Please, if you'd like no ads or commercials ever, you want some pre-show content every week, how about other monthly benefits like Brian doing a special or me doing a special? Who's up this month? I don't remember. Where are we at?
Either way, I'll be up. I'll do it. I'll do something. I've got so much stuff. We didn't even talk today. I keep going. I need to cram this in the show, but maybe I don't. Maybe I just need to make a little something.
Yeah, we got to put something up there.
I've got a whole bunch of new stuff. I've got a Super NES that is picked up with the pod racing, and I'm stoked about hooking it up. So maybe I'll talk some about that. Yeah. Maybe it's more about this Lego stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We'll get into it, you guys. We'll let you know. But anyway, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us and being a part of the Play Retro family. Go play something retro, and we'll see you next week.
Skate or die.
Get more at frogpants.com.
Sony PlayStation only has one.
Yeah. Sony PlayStation.
The one processor.
That's all they have. Me.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more. Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.